Hi, everybody. This is Nicola Scott, and you're listening to Behind the Panels.
They can be a great people color. They wish to be color. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 81 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's bagged and boarded for your pleasure. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And I'm David Longo.
In this issue, Warner cast the new Wonder Woman. Sorry, fans, it's not Nathan Fillion. Meanwhile, Fox announces X-Men Apocalypse. We predict all the characters will be Wolverine. Then it's the first trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man 2, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Power Girl by Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, and David's favourite, Amanda Connor.
Yay!
All that and more after these very timely messages. This is Behind the Panels.
Superman was so busy, he asked me to look after Sally and Jack. We were driving with the three pigs, but the two in the back wouldn't buckle up. The big bad wolf was behind us, and his impatience was about to cause an accident. At least one of the pigs buckled up. Well, those pigs learned their lesson, and I hope you have too. Seatbelts, a simple fact of life.
Wow, what was that, La Bamba playing in the background?
Yeah, there was something in there. There's the three little pigs and La Bamba and something about Superwoman telling us.
What an incredibly messy ad.
Yeah. The visuals, look it up. It's like the Superwoman PSA from the 70s, and it's like, she's telling people to buckle up and be safe because the three little pigs could get hurt. It's very strange.
This is really a Kara Zor-El day, isn't it?
Yeah. There's going to be a little bit more Supergirl as the day goes on.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
PG.
Anya PG.
Because, you know, the characters were confused for the longest time. And the book that we're doing this week comes in at a point where Kara's origin story is finally cleared up.
Yeah,
and they can move forward.
We'll talk a little bit more about that once the show gets going, but it was a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all those multiple Earths that DC got rid of, then brought back, and then got rid of again, and then brought back again.
As Power Girl says, it's one of the crises, right?
One of the crises, yeah. Everyone's having them these days.
So, is that how you heard her?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm like Pele Paga.
And I'm like, you know, running a country and running a corporation and stuff. Yeah.
I'm like pretty hot, but I'm not.
I think we should do our first live read of a comic.
And Dave should read Power Girl.
Well, this is going back to another Supergirl in our vintage clip of the week this week. So let's go back to see how this sort of character has been dealt with over the last couple of decades.
Cool.
Now this I like.
Hello.
Hello, she says.
Well, hello to you, honey bun.
Hello. I was wondering if you could tell me where I am.
Well, they call this place Eddie. Lover's Lane, isn't it?
You got it in one, Billy boy. Lover's Lane.
Oh, no. You see, what I meant was, those lights over there. What are they called?
Check out the view from back here, Eduardo. Oh.
Stop that.
You're, Superman's best friend, huh?
No. His cousin. I've come here to search for the Omega Hedron. It's a power source vital to Argo City. You see, that's where I live.
No kidding. Eddie and me, we're on a secret mission also. We're out looking for a good time. And you just won the brass ring, baby. Oh, she works out, huh?
Why are you doing this?
It's just the way we are.
And all I'm going to add to that is...
You just won the brass ring, baby.
Now, I'm going to say that Supergirl is on my list of gloriously, magnificently bad films. It is.
It's brilliant.
It's so awful.
It's vastly underrated, I think.
I bought it from Import DVD.
I've got it on Import DVD, the two-disc collector's edition.
Yes, I've got that. It is amazing.
The score is really good, but I mean, there was another line from that scene that I didn't include, which was this.
You shouldn't have done that, baby.
That guy's great.
He was in a lot of 80s films. He was always a bad guy.
I want him to do all of our intros. Can you imagine that? Imagine.
Welcome to issue 81 of Behind the Panels, baby.
You're with Eduardo.
Oh, dear. There was actually a line in the Avengers Annual that was out this week where Black Widow says, I once beat five guys to death with a broken arm, and they were all named Eduardo.
I will say one thing, though. Back in 1980, whatever it was, Helen Slater was hot.
Yeah, she's still hot in 2000.
I mean, when she was in that Supergirl suit, she was like, ooh, yeah.
Okay. Check out the view from back here, Eduardo.
Now, this is from brought to you by the director of that other magnificent film, Jaws 2.
Yes.
Oh, classic.
Jeannot Zwok, I think his name is. Yeah.
Is it a canon film?
Superman? No, it wasn't. It was still, at this point, the Superman franchise was still owned by Alexander and Ilya Salkind, who did the first Superman movie, and they were desperately grasping at trying to milk this franchise for anything it was worth because Superman 3 had been such a disaster. Mm. So we had Supergirl, and then shortly after, we had the Superboy TV series. And it was shortly after that they sold it all to Canon and we got Superman 4.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Because Superman 4 is so good.
I tend to rank them. Superman 4 is the greatest. The Quest for Peace is the greatest Superman movie ever made.
Yep.
Man of Steel.
Oh, yeah.
And then Supergirl, Superman 3, Superman 2, and then the original Superman, the motion picture.
Which was just a good film.
Which was okay.
Although Superman 3 does have Richard Pryor overacting.
Oh, I did forget Superman the Mole Man.
And Superman 3 also has bad Superman. Which is drinking in the bar, shooting peanuts out of the mirror.
And that fight scene is pretty epic in the tip.
In the junkyard. Yeah, absolutely. But this film does have, the Supergirl movie does have Faye Dunaway just completely chewing the scenery as a witch. With Peter Cook as her henchman.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And Brenda Vaccaro as her sidekick. And you're just like, what are you all doing in this movie?
Damn straight. Now, folks, apart from watching that, I've watched a lot of stuff this week, comics related, and I've read a few things too, being we're a comic book podcast.
Cool.
We tend to read stuff. So it's time for that section. I guess we should probably do it is this one.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
And I did. The comics-wise, we'll quickly kick this off. I guess the big book this week was Inhumanity, number one, which was the official start of the Matt Fraction Inhumanity arc, which is going to carry us all the way through till at least April.
Which I'm very excited. I haven't had a chance to read it yet. As we mentioned last week, we are in the process of trying to move. And so it's been an absolute chaos around this end of town, I can tell you. But Inhumanity is one of those books that I've actually really been looking forward to. I think purely because Matt Fraction is involved in it.
Yeah, we'll look out for this. This is following on from... And the strength of this issue is that it deals with one of the Inhumans, the Inhuman Royal kind of court that we're used to seeing, and he interacts a lot with Hawkeye. And because it's written by Matt Fraction, you kind of got that laconic
excellent
Hawkeye sense of humor in there as well. So I think he's definitely playing to his strengths on this one. But look out, all throughout the month and the coming months, there'll be .inh titles. Like it'll be like...
Like the Age of Ultron titles.
Yeah, it's obviously like, you know, number of issue .inh.
So this is now addressing, I haven't read it yet, so you help me out. This is now addressing the fact that they've woken up all these Inhumans.
The fact that Attilan has fallen and that they've woken up all these Inhumans in the process. So what they're basically saying at the start of this was Black Bolt sacrificed himself to bring about a new age of Inhumans. Right.
It's pretty much a recap issue, Dave. It was just like,
it really is
what happened during Infinity. Well, here's what happened.
Right.
But and they just explain to you over the issue and then it ends.
Yeah, but it ends with a pretty powerful moment because it's really setting up Minor spoiler, because I won't say who, but it ends with the apparent death of a character.
Cool. All right. I'll be very interested to read this
in a rather dramatic way. And it's if that death sticks, as you know, not many do in comics, but if that sticks at least for the duration of this event, it'll be interesting to see what ramifications that has for the Inhumans. So,
do you know if this is an actual event or if it's just a miniseries?
It's an event because it's going through a whole lot of titles. There will be an Inhuman ongoing series, I think, starting. I think it was meant to start in January, but it's been pushed back a little bit. I think we were talking about that a few weeks ago, or maybe last week. Go back and listen to last week's episode. I'll tell you when it's shifted where to when. And it's, yeah, so there's, but there'll be a whole bunch of tie-ins as well. So this is the next event following directly on from, help me out here, Infinity.
Yeah. Like all Marvel events, they have to lead into another
event. Into something else.
Infinity ended pretty tight, though. I got to say, this is more like Fallout, some basic kind of Fallout.
It is. And it's sort of Fallout from that, but then it's going to very much do its own thing. Mm. And it's going to focus on the Inhumans who haven't been in the limelight for a little while, so I think that's great. Because those of us who read all the Guardians and the Cosmic stuff a few years ago, the Inhumans are an integral part of that. So I'm hoping they bring... I don't know if they can bring the Inhumans into the Marvel Studios films, because I think they've got their roots in the X-Men.
Oh, no.
Interesting. But they're not actually mutants, so...
Aren't they going to be Inhumans Guardians?
But that could be a way of having mutant-like characters
in
the Marvel
Studios. Is there
any
way we
films?
Can find out what characters Fox actually licenses?
They're being very hedgy over the ones that are in the grey areas like that. Mm. So I think we're just going to find out when Fox... You know, when Marvel announces a film, Fox will announce the cast quickly afterwards.
It can't
be
a blanket, we own it. Because, like with the Fantastic Four, you would think there would be a blanket on the cosmic universe. But we've got Guardians of the Galaxy coming out. You know what I mean? So it can't be a complete blanket across everything.
No. There's definitely some weird loopholes there. Because look at Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Well, they licensed them. Marvel licensed them back.
Yeah. So but that still means that there's a possibility to...
So that was... There was also some rumors kicking around over the last couple of weeks that... Fox and Sony and Marvel Studios are in negotiation to have crossovers. We don't know if any of this is going to happen.
Because, I mean, Kevin Feige has actually said it's not outside the realms of possibility. Don't expect it in the next couple of years, but that doesn't mean that's got a lot of people thinking, well, maybe we can expect it a few years after. So maybe after after Phase 2 was over. You never know.
Spider-Man back.
Yeah.
Come on.
All it's going to take is one of those non-Marvel films to flop to go, okay, let's start talking again at the...
Yeah.
The
I actually do what we really want. We really want one of the licensed films to flop so that Marvel holds the cards.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So we want the next Spider-Man film to... I mean, I'm not... Don't wish bad on anybody.
No.
But we need... those films not be as successful as the Marvel Studios films, because then it gives Marvel more power to get their characters back.
Yeah. I mean, Spider-Man, I don't think there's any plans to let that go anytime soon. I think they're going to do Sony.
And Spider-Man have never flopped. Even Spider-Man 3, which was crap, made a bunch of money. Fantastic Four is a different story.
Yeah.
So they might... I mean, Fantastic Four is still a gamble at this point.
Yeah. Oh, well, let's see how it goes. But and then looking over the... Daredevil was so tainted after Fox, it's now being a Netflix series rather than a movie. So... let's see what happens there. Like, I want to quickly mention while we're talking about Avengers. Read the Avengers Annual that came out this week. It's a Christmas special, and it's so much fun. It's written by Catherine Immonen, and it's got this really light, cartoonish style. It's just a fun book. It's more like the Avengers Assembles books anything else. It's a nice sort of antidote to Infinity. You know, it's kind of after all that, we can kind of have a fun story. The Avengers are still capable of fun. I want to mention a big, big Australian book that came out this week, mostly because I'm quoted on the back of it.
Oh, cool.
which is I've mentioned the Zero issue a little while ago of Homebrew Vampire Bullets, which
we first found out about
when Christian Reed was here on the show. And Christian's got a piece in it. This is a book edited in Australia and released by, it's print on demand, but you can also buy a digital copy online, slightly less. And it's fantastic. I mentioned it a few weeks ago. When it's got the many lives of Harold Holt in there, that sort of stuff. And it's very political. You know, Tony Abbott supporters probably shouldn't read this book.
Are there still any?
At this stage, those of you not familiar with Australian politics,
sorry to drop that
Prime Minister Tony Abbott, sorry to throw up in my mouth a little, is. the devil incarnate. Let's just put it that way. So if we've just lost all our liberal listeners.
This show is not political, though. No. So let's
save that for behind the politics.
But but quite literally, in Homebrew Vampire Bullets, Tony Abbott is depicted as something slightly less than heavenly. So
let's do a show called Downton Abbott.
So if you're leaning towards that end of the political spectrum, or you just like a book that's fun, irreverent, in the tradition of the old eerie comics and a little bit Dark Horse Presents, this is your book. It's a monster book. It's like 150 pages.
Oh, I want to look at this.
Go and check it out. It's about $30, print on demand. My name's on the back of it for my quote from when I did a review of the Zero issue, but also Tony Martin.
So you're not invested in this at all?
I'm not invested in this at all. No, I love the book. I love the book, but I didn't know my name was printed on the back until I bought a copy.
Why else would they quote him, Dave?
That's true.
Yeah. That's true. Until I bought a copy.
Does it say Richard Gray behind
the
panels?
Behind the panels, it certainly does.
In that case.
We're all mentioned
on the back.
But no, seriously, though, even if I would recommend this
You're
book,
mentioned on the back and you're mentioned on the back.
I would recommend this regardless, and because the reason I'm quoted on the back is because I love this stuff.
Mm.
And go out and check that out. Support the Australian industry wherever you are in the world, because digital comics allows that to happen.
Absolutely.
What we need to quickly do now is talk about some of the TV shows that we've been watching. Yeah, Arrow was all right this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, Arrow was all right this week. It was not bad.
Yeah.
For those who... Now, this is minor spoilers, but we're not going to spoil it all because it's still an active TV show.
And it's also not really available in Australia.
Not yet, but it has been all over the news, so we will say that Barry Allen made his appearance.
Oh, yes.
In this episode. And I quite liked him. Yeah. I thought he had this nice nervous energy about him.
Or Kid Flash, as I'm calling him.
Yeah, he's not really the Flash. He's going to be...
He's about 12 years old, which they all joke about. They all joke about how young he looks. You know, and unlike every other character on the CW, he's short, fat, and unattractive.
I love the fact that Felicity's completely smitten by him.
Yeah.
I think that's so cute.
Yeah. It's great because they're nerds of a feather. And it's
and there's that one line, this is not too spoilers, there's that one line I love where Oliver has found out that he's lied, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he says, but he's lied about his background. And she goes, and what are we doing every day?
Every day, yeah. No, I love it. It's good because it is setting up the DC universe on screen. And they're doing it slowly, unlike the films, where they seem to, which we'll talk about in the news section, where they seem to be rushing to get all the characters into one film.
I have a new title for the Batman Superman movie, by the way. We'll bring that up later.
Yeah, exactly right. you probably haven't watched Arrow yet.
No.
But you have watched The Walking Dead.
I have watched The Walking Dead. And
what a finale. What a mid-season finale.
Can we play the Celebrate?
Oh, yeah, hang on. Celebrate good times, come on. Celebrate.
We can't spoil it. We can't.
Not yet.
It's only
not
been
yet,
out for a week. But I'm not going to say what happens, but remember how all year long I've been going on about how this season has been cleansing the palate.
Yeah.
Right? And they did three things. Yeah. Which we've wanted since the beginning, and I'm just so happy.
Yeah. So is it time for me to go guts myself on it?
Yes, because it is literally at status quo of the comic now.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
They've done it. They literally just spent 8 episodes, wiped the slate clean, and we're off. I can't wait.
What they've actually done, the set piece of this episode, is straight out of the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like straight
out. I am there. All right. I've got them all loaded. Yeah. I've all got them all loaded on my device. I just haven't been watching.
And this is the time to watch it because now we're at a mid-season break. We won't be getting any new Walking Dead till February.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So all now is the time to catch up,
Peter. So everybody who's out there who's on the fence like me, now it's time to watch.
Now's the time. Yeah, they did a marvelous job.
And just the pacing of this season has actually been really rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
And what we'll do in January, just before the show comes back, we'll do a Geek Movie Club special.
I think so.
On Walking Dead, the half season, spoilers and all.
Dave just threw out something that I think is really important. He said it's made for us. It really is. It is. It's a comic book TV show. It really feels like old school Walking Dead now, where it's kind of like we're trudging along every week, surviving, and stuff keeps happening to these people, and it feels good.
Great.
And this last episode, not to harp on it too long, but every 5 minutes, that's straight out of the comic book.
Yeah,
that's straight
really
out
was.
Of the. That's exactly how it happened.
Yeah, you know, and non-comic book readers, and because I work with a couple of big fans of The Walking Dead, they were actually saying, every time I said to them something like, I know, but it departs so much from the comic, they're like, we don't care about that. And I said, yeah, I know, but when it gets back to the comic, you're going to notice the difference immediately. And they actually said to me, they said, was that more comic? And I said, yes, it was. Yeah. You know, okay, they noticed how much had been taken.
And the funny thing is, they even do like fixes that they were like should have done, you know, two seasons ago.
Yes.
But they put them in here just to do it.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay.
And I can't believe Rick's head exploded like that.
No, they still haven't done that. They still haven't taken his hand away. Like, I just want his hand to go, and then I'm happy.
Yeah, it's in a bandage at the moment, but it's not.
You know why they didn't
it's
do
money.
It?
It's too hard.
It's special effects. Yeah, they just I can couldn't understand do it. They couldn't do it every week. Yeah. But no, I'm glad to hear that, and I will start binging on them now, so it's good. Time to catch up.
For all the other reviews, I'm going to have some more reviews up by the time this episode... Well, maybe not by the time the episode goes up, but certainly by the time you start listening to the episode this week, I will have some more reviews for comics up on the site, so look out for those. But for now, I think it's time for some news headlines, because it's been a pretty big week in news, I'd say.
Yep. Bryan Singer and Fox have announced X-Men Apocalypse, a new film set for May 2016. There's no other details on casting or plot just yet. Plot? Pilot.
Meanwhile, Fox was hired, or has hired, well, we're doing really well today, has hired writer Simon Kinberg to work with Mark Millar to create a Marvel Studios-style universe across the Fantastic Four and X-Men movies.
Speaking of Mark Millar, Millar World will release Starlight in May through Image Comics, which Millar describes as Buzz Lightyear meets Unforgiven. Pardon?
To infinity and... Fast and Furious star Gal Gadot has been announced as Wonder Woman in Zack Snyder's Batman vs. Superman.
Which should be called Superman, Man of Steel, Justice League. Marvel Comics announces a solo series for Magneto coming in March from Cullen Bunn and Gabriel Hernandez-Walter.
At last.
Wow, I was waiting for that.
Peyton Reed is on board to direct an adaptation of Dark Horse Comics' The Fifth Beatle about the life of Brian Epstein.
Magician David Copperfield has filed to register the trademark DC for among other things, comic books, comic strips, cartoon strips, children activity books, and storybooks. Wait a minute, how does that work? Isn't there prior art?
Well, finally, the trailer to The Amazing Spider-Man 2, in some territories called The Rise of Electro, was released this week. Let's have a little peek, and we're going to comment on the trailer as it goes along. Spider-Man is falling from the sky. He can fly! I can fly now!
As you said, Peter Parkour, right?
Yeah, Peter Parkour is his name. The more people I try to save,
the more enemies I will make.
I hope
so much angst.
Oh, Transformer Rambo!
He's almost as emo as Spider-Man 3 now. Those, more power. Electro's Mr. Freeze, apparently.
Isn't Jamie Foxx really poorly miscast in this?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. I love the way that like he and Gwen are just joking about people getting shot here. It's funny because it's like a pop cultural reference.
And it's funny, my boyfriend goes out and gets shot at every night. Yeah.
You're like totally cool and stuff.
Because Gwen Stacy's totally not going to die in this one. Right? Like, that's totally not going to happen.
And why is Harry Osborn just evil straight off the bat? They cast the most evil looking
because
person.
Because everyone has seen the original trilogy, Dave. It's a shorthand. But Sally Field's in this, so don't worry.
Sally Field!
And when Peter loves me! When did Spider-Man get the underground lair? I discovered what
Oscorp was going to use my research. Vulture and Doc Ock.
Doc Ock?
Yeah.
There's a tub, here we go, there's a tub of Venom goo here somewhere.
Yeah, and they didn't mention Venom on that screen that was on before. Hey, Electro and a whole lot of water, that can't mix well.
Oh,
Ring Goblin. You see, Electro was just a bunch of, like, electricity there for a bit? That was,
Oh, Transformers.
More than meets the eye to Rhino.
And the video game trailer begins now, right?
Hit X.
Can you imagine a world if Hans Zimmer didn't make music? Soon, everyone in the city
will know how it feels to live in a world. In a world.
In a world.
Oh, more water. That can't be good.
More evil Harry.
Oh, that's the back of Mary Jane's head. That's a video game, right there.
Oh, yeah.
This is Zack Snyder, man. 300.
Yeah.
That's
Mark. This is Spider-Man.
That's Mark Webb saying, see, I can direct action. I can direct action. I know how to go slow-mo. I'm sorry. All I can say is super villain overload. This is...
Well, we know what happened to Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, and Spider-Man 3 proves that you put in three super villains, you're going to run into a little bit of overload.
Mind
here.
You, they chose like Sandman.
It totally feels like a fan trailer, like edited together from all these different sources.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
And now, who is Green Goblin in this? Is it Harry Osborn or is it...
It looks like Harry.
Yeah, because it doesn't look like Norman.
No.
And he's not wearing a
Norman
helmet.
Norman's like in hospital dying.
Is why they were developing the solution so that he would get better.
Yeah.
But it looks like... And Harry Osborn's got the Hitler-esque hair straight off the bat. Yeah. So it's like, my best friend has come back. Oh, I think you're evil.
Is Harry Osborn also a failed painter in this?
I don't know, guys. My son was really excited about it. I watched it and just went, oh.
If Harry Osborn tries to stage a coup in a beer hall in this, then we'll know.
Yeah. Or if he starts to dance, we have a problem.
He's got the emo dance. But yeah, like the whole first third of that trailer was just, you know, my hair is better than your hair. I don't know. I'm still curious. I wasn't the biggest...
I do like the new suit.
Yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of the first Amazing Spider-Man because I thought, half the time I was just thinking, we've done this.
Yeah.
You know, but I kind of like the direction. I sort of thought this could be good. And I hate the fact though that all of our superhero movies have to be dark now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Avengers got that balance right of light and dark. You know,
the recent Thor and the Avengers before that, and Iron Man 3 before that, kind of prove that you don't have to be completely dark.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you can have a bit of fun,
particularly with the one photo that they released with a bit of levity in it, which was Spider-Man wearing a fireman's helmet. Putting out a fire with a giant hose, and we thought, yeah, that's the Spider-Man I know.
Yeah.
Like, fans instantly go, he looks so stupid in the fire helmet, he'd never do that.
It's
like,
he would.
Read the comics, people, he would. He totally would do that, and he'd be throwing out a bunch of one-liners
while he's
doing it.
But that's what's so sad about it, that one photo is the thing that we're grasping onto.
Ooh. Yeah, it's the internet, man.
But it's so, you know when my heart sunk? Far removed from Peter Parker. It's like
my heart
so
sunk when they released that banner a couple of weeks ago, which was the back of Spider-Man with Goblin on the sled, Rhino, and Electro, and I went, oh, we are going to do all three in one go? Like
we just
this?
Need toys.
And then the trailer came out, and it's like I was already kind of set.
It's hard not to be cynical, Dave, but I think that is it. They're selling toys. Yeah. I mean, it's this is Sony, you know, desperately, as we said before, like they're desperately going to do everything they can with that Spider-Man franchise while it's still making money. And, you know, and this is what we can expect. Whereas Marvel, kind of with the little that they've got, have built up. And I hate to be one of those fanboys. It's like, Marvel's doing it better. But they are.
Yeah. And think about it. When you go into a Toys R Us, which I go into quite a lot because I've got a child.
I go in there quite a lot anyway.
Yeah, you and me both. It's my birthday this week.
What show are we doing today?
I do go in there quite a lot by myself as well. But when you go into a toy store, you're not... There is Avengers stuff. There is Thor stuff and so forth. But you're not in it. It doesn't feel like this rash of just trying to sell us toys. Mm. And yes, they are.
Sells whatever Spider-Man.
But a franchisee holder is going to milk it for everything they've got.
Oh, damn straight they are.
I'll eat crow for this if the movie is good, but I think this is it. I think it's going to be worse than Spider-Man 3.
I think it'll still make money.
It'll still make half a billion dollars. Yeah. It'll make $500 million, and there will be a Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
But I think
they've now planned it out to be a trilogy. Yeah.
Well, they did from the beginning.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm still burnt by Spider-Man 3, though, because I didn't think it was like so bad to the point where we had to restart. I felt like a Spider-Man 4 could have, you know,
do you know
carried
what?
Through.
To me, it smacks as though that they've not learnt anything, because Raimi, half the reason he walked away from the franchise was that he said there was too much interference with the third one because they kept piling on villains and all that sort of stuff.
Wasn't he forced to include Venom? And
it seems
like
as
that?
Though they've kind of...
Raimi is on record as saying he hates Venom.
Yeah.
He said he doesn't like the Venom character.
The studio is desperate for Venom film. What they want to do is do these three films and then spin it off into a fourth film where it's like other spider characters.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they want to do the Clone Saga on screen.
Yeah, they want to do the Clone Saga, and they want to do the new Venom series where he's a secret agent.
Yeah, and then they do a Venom series, a Ben Reilly series, and all that sort of Scarlet Spider stuff, you know, all that stuff.
There'll be Sinister Sticks pretty soon, right?
Oh, they're teasing Sinister Sticks in this movie, and I reckon that'll be the third film. It'll be they'll try and do Sinister Six and the Death of Gwen Stacy.
Which is just going to be overload.
Yeah.
Complete overload.
Unless they do Death of Gwen Stacy in this and introduce Mary Jane in the next
movie. No, you know? Not good.
So
not good. I'm sorry. I looked at it and go, look, it's slick as hell. Visual effects look great. It'll be a fun ride, but I just don't think it's in the same league.
We're about halfway through, so should we quickly talk about the casting of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman? look, you know, I think half the internet agrees with you, David. The other half are being complete dicks about it. And so she needs to put on weight, you know. And then which Tom Taylor won the internet this week by saying, you know what needs to put on weight? The screenplay.
Yeah, but also anybody who thinks that she needs to put on weight, don't look at Fast and the Furious. Do an image search on her and have a look at some of her modeling stuff.
She'll work out. She'll be on some crazy regime
They'll buff her
Christian
up.
Christian Bale. You know.
Christopher
Reeve. Henry Cavill. They all were skinny things at the start of the casting announcement. Look how beefcake they were by the time they got on screen, you know. It's amazing what we can do with CGI now.
Absolutely. So I think she will buff up for the role and everything else. But
and we've seen her. We know she's good in action film. She's got the, you know, she's got the look. She looks like we're looking at photos of her now.
Yeah.
We've seen her in the Fast and Furious films. We know she can hold her own against big name stars.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think she'll.
And she's got an exotic look for an Amazon, which is nice.
It's what you need.
She's not purely white bread, you know.
No. Although she looks good in a white bikini.
But will the movie be good? That's the question.
If it's still
I'll be the voice of cynicism.
It's still being directed by Snack Snyder, so I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I don't hold a lot of hope for the film, quite frankly. I think this is
where they're too afraid to call it Batman versus Superman.
And can I tell you the biggest culprits of this whole cynical let's sell toys business is DC. Let's not forget
they should change change it to Man of Steel with an EAL.
They should just call it BS because that's what it's going to be, right?
Because think about have you guys watched the Batman and Robin film with commentary turned on? Because Joel Schumacher actually talks very, very directly about the fact that the studios would come to him and say, you need to change his batsuit now because we need another toy.
$10 says that there are rubber nipples in the next film. I will give you both $10 each if one of those costumes doesn't have rubber nipples.
All right, I'll wait to see it. Okay. But I will guarantee you, because DC's I'll make you a bet. Batman changes his costume 4 times because they'll sell 4 action figures in. Mm. Batman will fly in like at least 2 or 3 vehicles because they'll get toys out
of it.
They'll
have a jetpack.
Like, yeah, this is how DC makes money. And so basically when Joel Schumacher talks about Batman and Robin, he said that the entire thing was a toy sale. Everything about that film was a toy sale.
Mind you, with the conversations we've been having the last week, toy sales might be something we're interested in.
Well, there is that. Actually, we should just mention very quickly.
Let's do it.
Let's do it really quickly on air because I just want to get feedback on this. We are proposing. Nothing written in stone at this point, but we are thinking about opening a comic book store. Now
we've got to get the air conditioning fixed.
Yeah. The question here that we are going to throw out to all of our fans is where?
Yeah, we're in Sydney. We'd like to do it in Sydney, but you know, if there's another city, you know, we consider it.
Yeah, but we'd like to stay in Sydney for this moment. Let's be realistic. We are Sydney. We don't really want to open in Wollongong or in Newcastle.
I guess the big question is, are you a comic book reader in Sydney? Do you have to travel a long way to get your comics? And if so, would you go to a comic book store if it was closer in your area? We want to hear from you. Feedback at behindthepanels.net.
Absolutely.
Or leave us a voicemail message on Skype. We'll go check that out as well. All the details are on behindthepanels.net.
This is next year. This isn't happening straight away. We are still just researching at this point. But think about it. I just want you to put this into your heads. A comic book store with live podcasting.
And let's just say, we are very excited about this concept. And if we can make it happen, we're going to make this happen.
Yeah. Yeah. We should also ask, like, what do you guys want to see in a comic book store that you don't see?
Because think about it, this is going to be a comic book store by fans, for fans. We want to make this as much a community for comic book people and geeks and other people like us as we do a comic book store.
Absolutely.
That's our dream. We want to make the store as much fun as the show.
Yeah. Mm.
So, yeah.
So your feedback is going to be critical in helping us shape this idea.
And if it doesn't happen, well, look, you know, it's great to think about. Maybe somebody else can learn from it and we'll get the store that we always want to, and we'll go there as customers.
Mm. Absolutely.
You know, but we want to hear from you guys because, God, we're excited about this right now.
Absolutely.
The other thing David McVeigh is very excited about is this week's Kick-Ass Pick of the Week.
I am. Let's do it.
Do you reckon we should do it?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's
It's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
Power Girl is keen to move to New York for a fresh start, but under the guise of Karen Starr, she just can't take a break. Facing robot invasions, kidnappings from super intelligent apes, and an intergalactic Lothario who won't take no for an answer, will she ever get her life back on track? From the all-star team of Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, and artist Amanda Connor, this is A New Beginning. With aliens and apes, this is Power Girl.
Jerry Goldsmith, I miss you.
Oh, that was, of course, the score from the Supergirl film. And, yes. This David McFadden, I'm going to start with you because we're doing our personal picks at the moment. So I prepared a series of questions. No, what I thought I'd ask you about is because last week I started off talking about why I picked Green Arrow Quiver. So why was it you really wanted us to read this?
Okay, so let's set the Wayback Machine, and we go back a couple of years ago. And I had been out of the comic scene for a while. I've talked about this before. I had dropped out completely. I was never the huge DC guy. But I had watched a lot of the DC animation and stuff like that. And Power Girl had appeared in the Justice League a couple of times. And I thought she's kind of a cool character. And let's face it, she's sexy as hell, good costume and everything else. When I started rereading comic books, I came across this Power Girl series. And I thought, oh, that could be kind of fun. I said, let me look up Power Girl and see what her deal is. And then I started to realize that Power Girl has no definitive origin story. She's a mess. Mm. So basically, this is a comic book where DC created an alternative to Supergirl because they obviously want to cash in on Superman. Mm. I think, believe Power Girl's a 70s creation.
I think so.
Yeah, she's a 70s creation. She was originally supposed to be the Earth 2 Supergirl, a variation of who ended up on Earth 1 and hid her identity because there was already a Supergirl, so she had to pretend to be somebody else, blah, blah. However, DC wasn't happy with that, and they obviously decided that they wanted to make her an Atlantean, and so she was then the daughter of Warlord, I believe it was, really? Of Atlantis, and that was her. The entire Kryptonian thing was actually a lie, and she was just told to believe that. But then she was back to being Kryptonian. Anyway, the whole thing is a mess. Along comes Connor and Palmiotti, and now I came across this series, and I thought, okay, I'll have a look at this. And I remember Power Girl being kind of silly, but whatever. And I started to read this, and I started to go, this is actually really fun, and I just devoured the 27 issues. Now, Palmiotti and Connor only did the first 12, and that's what I'm truly in love with. The rest of it's okay. And the last issue, the 27th issue, is actually a really stellar comic book. But the first 12 caught my imagination because here is a really fun character, a really fun take on the character, bringing in Tara, who I knew nothing about as well, who turns out was actually a Palmiotti and Connor creation. Mm. There was a previous Tara in Teen Titans, and they cover that in a Terra miniseries, which I went back to find. And it became like you with Arrow.
Yeah.
In the sense of going,
which is also that JSA miniseries.
That's what I was going to say. And the JSA miniseries, which led into Final Crisis.
That's called JSA Classified. If you're for it.
And yeah. I think it's about four issues or something like that.
It was an ongoing, but the first four issues.
Each one was a different character they focused on. The first one was Power Girl by Connor and Palmiotti. And in it is the classic line where they basically say, she says, why do I have the window on my costume? And she answers that question by saying, because I couldn't find myself in the shadow of Superman, so I didn't know what logo to put on my chest, so I chose to put none.
None, yeah.
And so she kept the window on her thing until she could find a logo of her own. So she basically, within the JSA Classified, we finally solidified she is Kryptonian. She was from Earth 2, so she was the Earth 2 Kara Zor-El. Mm-hmm. She ended up on Earth 1 and then finally made her way back to Earth 2, and she was a member of the JSA. Then the Tara miniseries came in. We introduced Power Girl to help move the Tara character into place, and then Connor and Palmiotti took over and basically made a Power Girl series with Tara as the co-star. And once you put all this into place, you go, we finally solidified a backstory, we finally have a character who's comfortable with who she is, and we have a history on her. And they just went, enough of the soul-searching, enough of the belly-button gazing, let's just have fun. Mm. And that's what Power Girl is. The other thing that caught my attention about this series was that Richard and I have talked many, many times about the fact that Superman is unapproachable.
Mm. Yes.
Here's a character who is superpowered, almost godlike in his abilities, can't be killed, can't be beaten, da-da-da. And you sit there and go, well, how do we relate to that character? And that's why it becomes very hard to read Superman books.
Yeah, we talked about this when we did All-Star Superman.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
So along comes Power Girl, who has exactly the same power set, is basically the female equivalent of Superman. And Palmiotti on Connor and Gray, we shouldn't miss out Gray.
Never miss out Gray.
Basically turned this character into somebody human, somebody we can relate to, somebody we want to go to the movies with, you know, and sit around and eat ice cream and talk about what she's going to name her cat and stuff like that, and still be a superhero and still have that fun of being a superhero. And I thought just purely because they could make her human made it approachable.
Mm.
And I love that aspect of it. What did you guys think? Look, I could rave about this all day long. I love this book. This is actually one of my favorite comic series of all time, just purely because it's so much fun.
Yeah, I thought it was like magnificent for like exactly the same reasons that you're saying.
And it's
saying.
The first 12 in particular. After that, it becomes a little bit more serious. It becomes a little bit more comic bookish.
Yeah, we should say that.
It's the first 12. Yeah. After that, Amanda Connor and Justin Gray and Palmiotti left.
Yeah.
They moved on to other things. Now, one of the big things has been, why did they leave? Why would they leave this stellar run? Now, I've got a clip of Connor actually talking about this. I don't know if it's going to play because I didn't put it on the soundboard. We're going to try and feed it off of here. Let's just see if this actually works. Give me a second. Come on, you stupid thing.
While you're trying to line that up, I'll just say as well, I found this incredibly fun as well.
Oh, that's not it. That's something else. That's a completely different game. Keep talking.
I'll just say, look, you know, one of the things I found about this series was that I found it incredibly fun. Mm. And I think particularly in a post-New 52 world, there are so few comics that are quite this fun.
Yes, you know? let me stress and, that, hey, because like the time that I'm reading Power Girl at the moment, it's like, everything in the New 52.
It's a wasteland
now. It's so serious. It's like this feels so much, you know.
With the exception of the new Harley Quinn book that's just come out by Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
Yeah, no coincidence, right?
Yeah, exactly right. So they brought the fun back to the DCU, which I think this was great. And this was a time in the DCU where things were pretty dark as well, because comics have been getting darker and darker and darker since the mid-80s. So it is like a breath of fresh air coming through to any comics universe when you have
everything drawn out over like, you know.
Well, this is my other point. I had trouble getting into this series at first simply because it is so episodic, you know, and it is these little short fun vignettes, which I think is great because it makes the book more accessible to new readers.
Mm.
You can almost pick this up at any issue.
This feels like episodic television.
It is.
It feels like this is the freak of the week.
Yeah. It's almost Power Girl, the sitcom.
Yes.
You know, and I think it's kind of a strength and a weakness, because if you're looking for that traditional comic book, you're not going to find it here.
Mm.
So reading these all 12 of these issues so close together, I did kind of find, I think way back when we were doing Sam and Max, you said the same thing. It was kind of like, I love the sense of humor, but it's too much all at once.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
And so I had to take pauses throughout the week. I couldn't just read it all in a night, or, you know, how I normally read a run like this, even though the content is quite... Well, the thing is, the content's quite talky. Like Kevin Smith last week, there's a lot of dialogue.
Oh, really much so, very much so. And once again, that sitcom analogy is perfect, because there is as much time spent as her as Power Girl as there is as her as Karen.
Karen, yeah.
And going to the movies. Did you guys notice the little cameo by the Big Bang Theory
boys? Yes, yeah.
Basically, they're at the movies and they start hitting... Howard hits on her, basically. And I love the fact that Connor draws Power Girl as a 6-foot Amazon. I mean, this girl, she's huge, right? And she's towering. Yeah.
I love the thing that this is a one note joke in some ways. It's pretty much people are constantly trying to get inside her in one way or the other.
Yes,
literally, the first villain is the Ultra Humanite, a giant albino simian who literally wants to get inside her body and use her body.
That's correct.
As a host. Then, you know, that they play with that cleverly sometimes with, what's the name of the intergalactic Lothario?
Vartox.
Vartox.
who is an old Superman villain.
That's right.
From the 70s.
And he comes down looking all sleazy in the 70s.
Looking like Sean Connery from Zardoz.
Exactly right, yeah. And he comes down with the jumpsuit and all, and... you know, he wants to, Baxter comes down and says, I want to impregnate you.
Yeah,
you
I love
know.
That. There's that one line.
I want you to impregnate my planet.
Where, where he goes, I want you to help me repopulate my planet. She goes, well, I know I've got super parts, but we all have limits.
But then he tells her it's through the use of a pregno ray, and she can't stop laughing over that. I love
and
it.
It's that sense of humor where he goes, and he's in the middle of a big speech, and there's this little side bubble that just goes, stop laughing.
Yeah. It's funny what you mentioned, though, about the first 12 issues. Because when it moves to Judd Winnick, it has different problems.
Yes, I agree.
You know, like then it becomes too, you know, like long form storytelling is too much.
You know what,
like,
the problem is?
Like you got like all your crises happening around.
Well, they brought in the whole JSA
like
and everything.
They brought in the rest of the DCU. You're dealing with the Dick Grayson as Batman period. Like it then now, becomes too entrenched. Well,
I think I have that clip. Let me play it. So the question is, after issue 12, why did she leave?
Okay.
So let me see if this will play. We're fighting technology here. So if this plays.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make her sexy, but I think one of the ways that I wanted to make her sexy is inside and out. You know, everybody knows that she's got the killer bod, but I also wanted to give her a really great personality. And when I was working with Jimmy and Justin, they were writing it. They wrote her to be a great character with a lot of attitude and everything, and I thought that's really going to bring it all together. I loved working on that character, and if I had been a faster artist, you know, and better at holding down a monthly book, I would have stayed on that book indefinitely because it was so much fun.
Which is the joke she makes in Harley Quinn.
Absolutely. Now we understand why in Harley Quinn, issue zero, there's that constant running joke of, can they make a monthly schedule?
Yeah.
She's obviously admitted she can't. And that's fine. She makes a great living off of covers.
And can I say that for any other, and the things I've mentioned, I don't see as faults, but sometimes they're impediments to like reading it all in one hit. But can I say that if I have to pull up last week's Green Arrow on its constant sexual references in a kind of cheeky, almost juvenile way, you kind of have to level the same accusation here.
Absolutely.
But Amanda Conner's art is so tasteful, despite the fact that every issue someone's getting undressed somewhere. Amanda Conner's art is so tasteful and so cheeky that it gets away with it.
And in fact, Amanda Conner, I read an interview with her some time ago, which I couldn't re-find again for this show, but I can paraphrase it. Basically, she was asked about that. She said, in this particular world of sensitivity towards sexuality and stuff like that, you know, you've drawn Power Girl more extremified than she's ever been before. I mean, she's got this enormous bust, you know, and this absolute bod to die for, and so does Tara. And,
I
you know,
think under the next artist, the bust gets even bigger.
Possibly, yeah. But she actually approached it and she said, when we took this book on, she actually said, Jimmy and Gray and I sat down and we said, she's got the panel, she's got the boobs, she's got the body, so let's play with that. So instead of being ashamed by it or trying to convert her or trying to do, let's just play with that. So what we've got is we've got this cheeky artwork from her where the men are often talking to her chest and she's saying, like, she's like, this is eyes up or like, there's that point where Tara takes her to her home city under the ground, and she gives her that tiny little string bikini thing
that,
to put
that
on.
Was probably the most
And she's going, this is a thought bubble. It's like, what am I supposed to do with this?
That was the most exploitative part of it, you know. That was
let's confront the elephant in the room then, you know, like, can female characters be a sexy in comic?
I think they can, and I think this is what Power Girl proves. I think Power Girl proves that you can do it without being overly sexist.
So I think what they've done here is they've made her a great character and a great human first, because what they've done is they've, instead of being Power Girl, she's, as you said, she's Karen for most of this thing. So they deal with her life.
And when she's in her own life, she's wearing turtleneck jumpers and she's fully covered, you know. She's just a person.
She's dealing with it. They also play with the fact that because of her most famous assets, half the people she meets knows that she's Power Girl.
Yes. You know? And there's that wonderful, I love that there's that one line where, and I'm paraphrasing once again, I could probably find it if I look for it, but there's that one line where she's been knocked unconscious by the explosion in the park, and the fire department have picked her up and they're carrying her off in a stretcher, and he goes, boy, she's a lot heavier than I expected.
And he goes,
all that weight's probably in here. And the guy in the front goes, Hernandez!
Yeah, no, isn't it my wife's going to kill me?
No, that's afterwards.
That's afterwards.
He goes, I bet all the weight's in her. And then it drops off because the other guy goes, Hernandez, stop that.
But you raise a good point, Dave, because I think it's really hard to do. I mean, almost every female superhero, and Kelly Sue DeConnick said this when we had her on the show. She was like, yeah, I know, you could argue that male characters are just as exploited in their
That's
thing.
Exactly the first,
but,
yeah.
But she also said, you look at most female characters, their outfits, and using her words, are gynecological.
Mm.
You know, she said, in order to have men being the equivalent of that on panel, you'd have to have their penises half hanging out. You'd have to have...
You'd be like one panel of Vardox when he walks in that G-string.
So it is hard, and I think that there is an audience of this book who are not buying it for its cheeky sense of humour. Mm. They're buying it because... And they know it as well. And so I think they do play to that occasionally.
Did you guys notice that when Amanda Connor leaves, the depiction of Power Girl becomes more conservative? It becomes...
And I think
more
that's under,
constrained.
I think it's under Judd Winnick as well.
That in the artwork? Yeah, I think that's also got to do with the fact that the artist that took over was male.
Yeah,
that's so there was going to be a lot heavier criticism on him for being overt because he's male.
And also Judd Winnick is, knowing his politics, he is not going to allow anything that's anti-feminist.
That's right. And it's interesting because what it took away from the book was it took away its cheekiness.
Mm.
It became... just a superhero book.
And it is a different book. It almost could have relaunched to that point as a completely separate book. The thing I did actually notice, and this is very quickly because we're going to have to wrap up in a minute, is what a big shift it is as well, bringing in the rest of the DC continuity. The same thing happened to Green Arrow back when Mike Grell had his character in a pocket universe almost. And then as soon as he left, it opened up to the rest of the DCU, and you realize how complex the DCU is, particularly given that there was a crisis going on, the whole Max Lord thing. All that stuff suddenly floods in, and it's like she's no longer Power Girl. She's just another character.
I love the fact in this. I mean, there's one point where New York City is suspended by cables in the air, and she calls out to the Justice Society. They're like, oh, no, we're all too busy right now.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, I'll have to take care of this then. Yeah. I love the fact that we bring in Wildcat, too, which is a character you don't see very often and was recently mocked in the Robot Chicken DC special with, am I supposed to fight Darkseid because I'm just a guy in a cat suit?
I think Judd Winnick nails it, the whole objectification issue, in one part of the storyline. It's with Blue Beetle. And it's Power Girl's discussion about Blue Beetle saying,
it's
like,
a flashback, isn't it?
Yeah, I always thought he was just stupid. I always thought he was nothing but a, you know, that really kind of sold it to me.
I think you're right. I mean, there is expectation. When you've got a blonde, big-breasted character, I think people are going to come into a book with expectations. Mm. And I think we can all agree is what Palmiotti, Connor and Gray have done with this series is played with and defined those expectations.
We should also mention Paul Mounts as well, who is Connor's regular colorist. This book is beautiful.
Mm.
I mean, the artwork is gorgeous.
I should say early next year, and there's a link in the show notes, the book is being brought out as a complete hardcover collection.
Oh, thank God.
It's finally coming out. It'll be the four JSA classified issues plus the 12 issues as one
and
complete.
Terra?
I don't know about Terra. No, Terra's not in there as well. It's just the four JSA classified plus the 12.
Right.
All the Connor artwork basically all together in one spot. Fantastic. We'll all be buying this.
I will be buying this,
but
absolutely.
If you want to support the site, go and use the link via the show notes to Amazon.
Yes, absolutely. I will definitely be buying this. I also want to buy the trade of Terra because those four issues.
Or just wait until we open our shop and come and buy it.
Now, the other thing I want to talk a little bit about was the fact that Connor actually reinvented Power Girl a little bit as well. So if you look at back to the 70s and 80s, Power Girl was basically wearing a leotard and funny roll-top boots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a dorky costume. She took essentially the same costume, still the white leotard, still the blue gloves and the blue... But she actually made it realistic. She actually put zips on the backs of the gloves. Yes. There's no roll tops. The boots look functional. She's put buckles on everything. The actual leotard's got piping on it, so it actually looks like it's thick. It doesn't look like it's just like she's wearing her gym clothes. She actually made her look like a viable superhero, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think it's we should... all credit this book. If you just had Palmiotti and Gray's script, it would have been fun. But Connor makes this book. She's the superstar.
And it makes it feel like, this is a weird thing to say, because it's in New York, it makes it feel like a Marvel book.
Yes, and that was the other factor, was the fact that it was New York.
Yeah.
This is, for me, highly recommended. And a lot of people go, oh, you like Power Girl, what a stupid character. This is why I like Power Girl.
Yeah.
These 12 issues. I couldn't give a damn what happened before JSA Classified. It's when Connor took over. Connor and Palmiotti made it.
Well, boys, I think we can safely say that this is one we can recommend.
Yes.
And I want to really salute them for this book that does something different.
Mm.
And despite the reservations that I had of saying I had trouble getting into it, I still highly recommend it. It's just that that was an impediment, certainly coming into it from a modern comics world into that. You know,
I completely understand that, yes.
But I still love it. I still love it. Yeah. I still think it's fun. So thank you, David, for making me finally read that.
About time. It's taken 2 years to get you to read it.
Look, very, very quickly, we won't bother with the whole Girl from Ipanema thing because we're running out of time very quickly.
Yep.
But I will say we had a little bit of feedback this week. First of all, on the Geek Actually Superfeed.
Oh, I can't resist.
Okay, thank you, David. We actually had a quick... someone left us a comment there on the show saying, best show ever, yay, 5 stars. Even though I've never read a comic book, I get all my... this is from Withy 2009. Even though I've never read a comic book, I get all my geekgasms or geekasms from this podcast. Love the reviews. Definitely subscribe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Withy 2009. Our good friend Alessio, or at the movie Madman on Twitter, actually said about last week's episode, this episode is hilarious, literally laughing so hard tears are streaming down my face. Thank you, that was good. We weren't trying to be funny. That was our deeply very special episode.
No, we were trying to be funny.
We're just naturally funny guys.
He also said that I get so giggly like a schoolgirl whenever I talk about Green Arrow. Really, dude? <don't>
He's but, like good I guess,
but he notes that he's kind of, he gets the same when he's and he talks about The Flash, and I've asked him to recommend us some Flash runs to go back and read at some stage. So definitely want to do some of that, particularly because there's a Flash TV show coming
out. You
know
what we've never mentioned? We got to mention this very quickly because we're in the feedback section anyway. Yeah. P.O. Box 861 Kings Grove 2208. If you guys ever want to send us anything, we do have snail mail too.
Excellent.
There you go.
All of that is on our contact page on behindthepanels.net, which is one of the places you can find us. One
Power Girl Green Arrow merchandise, send it through.
Well, one of the other places you can find us, well, me anyway, is on Twitter at DVDBits. That's where Alessio found me. You can also find me on behindthepanels.net, therealbits.com occasionally, and our other podcast, Geek Movie Club.
Fantastic. You can find me at geekactually.com, which is the host of all of these podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Dave McVeigh, or sitting in a room staring at Power Girl.
Staring, you say?
Staring.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can find me at at Dave Longo on Twitter and damgoodcup.com.
Fantastic. What are you staring
and
at?
And also at the Geek Movie Club.
What are you staring at? Keep your eyes off my girl.
Hey, she's got an emblem there, Dave.
Well, next week, we're doing Dave Longo's pick, which
Barry
is... Barry Ween,
Boy Genius.
Which
I really recommend you read.
Which is by Judd Winnick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're actually, there's a few, but we're just going to do the first miniseries release that came out.
It's the first collection.
The first collection. If you're looking to get these now, I think the only thing in print is the Big Book of Ween or something like that.
Yeah, I think
which
so,
has got like everything
I used
in
to
it.
Have them in trades.
Yeah.
But it was a book that I would, you know, pass around a lot. I don't know where they've gone. So
yeah. So look, this is the big one. This is the only way you can get it at the moment. Go seek that out. But... and you were saying this is one of those books that was meant to have inspired Jimmy Neutron. We'll talk about this next week, of course. But
inspired is a thing that is probably not the right word.
A bit of controversy there.
Well, it's so close to Jimmy Neutron. It's amazing. But
bring the history next week.
Okay, but R-rated. R-rated if you're readers.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so remember, so adults-ish only next week.
Very
so.
Adult only from an 8-year-old boy.
So until that week, we're going to go off and read some R-rated comics then.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe and, MA.
Well, I'm the R-rated Richard Gray.
I'm the PG-13 rated Dave McVeigh.
And I'm definitely a G. Dave Longo, here.
And you're listening to the not yet rated Behind the Panels.